this system did the crime. And I'm going to make an analogy that I make no apology for making, but this artificial intelligence is similar.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jurjage in the Ganiagaha language and Muniag in Anishinaabemowin, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end in both French and in English. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, live in studio on Thursday, April 11th, 2024. I was off last week. We were going to take a break, but then I got super sick. And so I feel so grateful to be back in studio, feeling healthy and spry and getting to talk with you this evening. We have a lot coming up. It's kind of nice to mention that we started this week with a once-in-a-lifetime eclipse. We close it out with April showers, but rain or shine, there is stuff that you can see this weekend in theater. And we're also looking ahead to next week. Very busy calendar ahead. I'll tell you about two shows happening this weekend, but just to let you know who is coming up tonight. Powerhouse Ojibwe playwright Drew Hayden Taylor and Diane Marie Bridge on their work on Infinitheater's new play, Open House, which uses real estate to ask big questions about comparing oneself to others, either on the individual or group level. They'll be our first guests this evening. And you know a flock of birds? It's mesmerizing to see them flit through the air. How do they know where to go? Is there a leader? What's the hive mind doing? We're going to meet the art company trying to convey the movement of birds, but on ice. Yes, this is Le Patin Libre. Their new show is Murmuration or Murmuration. We'll find out more after we meet with Diane and Drew. And before the end of the hour, Xander Chung is here. Many of us resent empty words and rhetoric. Xander, you're going to speak with an artist who's trying to rally against that.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to this. It sounds like such an exciting show, and I really feel like it's apropos with the times.
You know? Okay, so, cool.
I'm just jazzed to speak with this artist.
Xander, did you check out the eclipse this week?
Accidentally.
Actually. Accidentally?
Yeah. I was out doing my groceries, and I kind of live under a rock if I don't have to be anywhere.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm just at the open-air market. I'm really lucky to be close to it, and I just happened to cross, like, a group of really awesome students who had some spare glasses. So I kind of hung out with them and watched the sun while the moon got in the way of me watching the sun.
You stumbled on to the moon, stumbling upon the sun.
Oh, yeah. It was an experience. Really cool, especially if you were listening to the Dune soundtrack, the newest.
Really? Were you?
Oh, yeah. No, okay. It is a esoterically fascinating experience.
That's so odd. I know Dune is out in theaters now, but I was just catching up on the genius of Hans Zimmer, the music maker for the films, for both films, and I was listening to Dune Part 1 last week,
yeah.
And I have to get on to Dune Part 2. Fabulous movie for sure. I made my plans. I went to Parc Jean-Drapeau and got glasses and everything, and it was nice. My family joined me last minute, so it was pretty remarkable. I did look by accident at the eclipse for a split second, and I could see something was happening with my eyes, so like the warnings were real. All right, Xander, we'll talk to you later this hour. So much to do on the show this weekend. So much to do on the show tonight. We're going to try to play some music from the upcoming Jazz Festival Internacional. The full lineup was unveiled earlier this week, so we'll have some selections from some of the bigger guests that are coming up. You can follow us for updates, images of our guests, and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. I've got a post up right now, including a really nice image of the Patin Libre people. We will have that conversation a little later on. And this weekend, if you're looking for things to do, 15 Dogs continues at the Siegel Center. I cried when I saw the show. I caught the very first preview before opening with my mom, and I absolutely loved it. So this is a really fun show, especially if you like watching actors. I know that's a strange thing to say, but I just mean seeing people do different accents and different characters and then pretending to be a dog one moment and a human the next. It's a joyous thing to watch in that sense. And of course, a couple performances left of Every Day She Rose. I'm hoping to see it this weekend. Studio Espace Libre. This is a Black Theater Workshop show about two friends who go to a pride parade and have some conversations following the fallout of an unexpected protest there. And the director for that show is Diane Marie Bridge. Diane is very busy, and she is also directing a show that opens up later this month, Infinitheater's Open House. It's in a very interesting new setup. We're going to speak with Diane as well as the playwright Drew Hayden Taylor in just a moment. Stay tuned here on Upstage.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We have been running a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters for the last couple years, and the phone number has recently changed. You can now reach us at 438-858-6116. We would like to thank Fed Phone Line for providing us with this number for free. They wanted us to tell you that they help save money to inmates, family, and friends by reducing the cost of collect calls. For more information about their company, you can go to fedphoneline.com. So again, our new number is 438-858-6116. You can call us collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison at that number. As always, we're an all-volunteer collective and don't always manage to answer the phone. If you can leave a message, please do. If you're calling collect and we don't pick up, try again next time you can get to the phone. And again, our phone number is 438-858-6116, and you can call us collect from Riviere de Prairie Prison or Bordeaux Prison.
Production Nuit d'Afrique presents Malian superstar Oumu Sangaré, who has influenced the likes of Beyoncé and Alicia Keys. Oumu Sangaré will perform an exclusive concert at M. Toulouse on April 21st, 2024. Tickets and info at festivalnuitdafrique.com.
Some Norah Jones for you, a recent album. That is the track Running. Norah Jones is going to be at the Festival International de Jazz de Montréal coming up in June. It always follows up kind of, or meshes a little bit with the Fringe Festival. So once Fringe kind of dies down and it's like, oh, Fringe is over, I'm so sad. But hey, we have something else to go and see. We'll have some more tunes from Jazz Fest picks through the rest of the evening. Thank you so much for joining Upstage tonight and letting us be part of your Thursday night lineup. I'm very, very, very excited to speak with our next two guests, both artists of national renown and also triple-barreled names, and very talented people to boot. We are looking at Infinitheater's upcoming presentation of Open House. Yeah, it feels like didn't we just talk to Infinitheater? Their show Dominoes at the Crossroads was a fabulous presentation. Last time we chatted with artistic director Zach, as well as one of his performers who worked on the adaptation of that particular show. This time we're looking at a play called Open House. It's about our very human tendency to compare ourselves to others in either good things or bad, who has it worst, who has it best. And of course, it uses real estate for this particular question. Joining me on the line, I've got the director as well as the writer. Drew Hayden Taylor is an award-winning playwright, novelist, columnist, and documentarian, and he was on the show just last fall ahead of the opening of his play Alternatives at the Centaur. We had a great conversation, so nice to have him back so soon. And Diane Marie Bridge is the award-winning writer, director, and creative producer, currently artistic director at Black Theater Workshop, and she's also having just a very busy spring because her show that we mentioned just a couple minutes ago has a couple more performances this weekend, Every Day She Rose. Welcome to Upstage, Drew and Diane.
A pleasure to
be here. Thank you so much.
It's great to have both of you on the phone. Thank you. And you can both hear each other. Drew, say something.
Yeah.
There he is. And Diane, are you hearing us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, fabulous. Okay, cool. I want to start off just by getting a few more details about the play because it's a new one. So, Drew, you've written about so many different themes over the course of your career. Why is real estate on your mind right now?
Well, real estate is I'm using a big, fancy English teacher word, a metaphor for the larger issue. Artistic director of Lighthouse Theater in Port Dover. I was chatting with him, and he wanted me to do something. He was asking if I was interested in doing something political about, you know, all the different things Native people can call each other, Native, Aboriginal, First Nations, Indigenous, etc. And that was interesting, but I decided I wanted to expand it more and do sort of, what about a discussion about who has been the most marginalized in Canadian history? And I started talking with him, and then I started talking with Infinite Theatre, Zach and all that, and Infinite Theatre ended up taking the reins on the story. And we just began to sort of play around with the idea of objectively stepping back and looking at Canadian history. And one of these situations where a group of people are trapped in this house, And they've got nothing to do but basically argue about this topic. So I wanted to approach it through humor because you have to approach something like this through humor. And it just became a fun, interesting way of exploring history. You know, several years ago, I did a play for the National Arts Center on the a biography of Sir John A. Macdonald. During the sesquicentennial, and I don't know, I just have fun doing these kind of things.
It's so interesting. You do mention humor, and that is kind of a hallmark of your writing and how you go about navigating all these super thorny issues. Diane, I want to bring it to you for a moment. What do you think about this idea of using real estate as a scaffolding, this idea of an open house? We're coming in to buy something. It's an experience so everyone can relate to. Just about everyone's checked out an open house for whatever reason. You're helping someone buy. You're looking to buy yourself, whether you're fully committed or just thinking about it. What can you expand on that a little bit about using that concept and then enlarging it into the bigger conversation Drew's trying to get at?
Yeah, I think the way we've been approaching it here in the rehearsal hall is that even though all of these characters are engaging in this almost like oppression Olympics, who's got it worse in this country, at the end of the day, they're all in the position to actually buy a home. And the reality of this market is literally like, who are the people who can actually afford a home? So socioeconomics comes into play, and folks are really trying to go for the exact same thing. They're all in a position where they're trying to buy into this very middle class ideal version of their lives, and at the same time, they're trying to hold on to the oppression that they have all endured. So it's really kind of a humorous take on how much are we holding on to? What are we letting go? What truths are we telling ourselves? The narratives that we're telling ourselves about our reality as well.
Home ownership is a really hot topic because it's become so hard to buy in Montreal. The market's just heated up so much. And we're looking at a generation that doesn't approach can't approach home ownership in the way our parents and our grandparents' generation did. So, Drew, you say that you've been toying with this idea for some time, the open house, real estate, who can buy. Have you kind of had to update some of your writing or your thinking as we've gotten into this housing crisis? There's not enough homes for the people in this country.
Well, when I originally wrote the first draft of this, it was aimed towards the Toronto area. But I've obviously had to tailor it and focus it for the Montreal area. But for me, the big irony is the fact that I'm writing this play, and one of the characters in the play is Indigenous. And, you know, there's this sort of, I don't know if you want to call it guilt or whatever, but the fact that as Indigenous people who have had issues with land ownership, with the dominant culture, the issue never seems to go away. It just seems to pop up in a whole new, different manner. So in this particular case, we've got these four different people from different backgrounds vying for the same land, including one Indigenous woman who just says, you know, it's like, how can we buy something back that we didn't have the right to sell, kind of thing.
Diane, do you have any thoughts on that? Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point because it speaks to the idea of the idea of ownership of land itself and how we have all bought into this system. When before this, there was a reciprocal relationship with the land, and I think that goes across multiple countries and cultures. The idea of owning land is something that is a very colonial idea as well. So what's our relationship with that structure?
I'm speaking with Diane Marie Bridge, who you heard just there, Andrew Hayden Taylor, the writer. Diane is the director. Open House is coming to Factory Studios. I'm going to get to the location in just a second because it may not be familiar to you just yet. Opens next week, April 18th, running until the 28th. Drew, I wanted to... It's so funny that you say this is for a Toronto audience originally, where you're kind of based, you're based more out there, where real estate is just nuts, if we can use that expression. Montreal's kind of catching up in a certain way. And so it's nice to know that you've tweaked things because Infinitheater really prides itself on Montreal stories for Montrealers. I guess I wanted to go back to oppression Olympics. That's the word I was thinking about. And Diane, you brought it up. This idea of comparing oneself to others. Who has it worst? And who has to be silent on a certain topic because you can't speak to something like that? Is it a futile debate to kind of compare and contrast? Like, do you guys find yourself slipping into these conversations where you're like, I think my people had it worse. I'll point that to you, Drew.
Well, I mean, yes, in many ways it is apples and oranges. You can't sit down and throw things out to try and top one another. But in the situation that this play takes place, I think it happens that, oh yeah, that happened to you. Well, this happened to me. So I think in this particular situation, when they're killing time, they're waiting to get out of the house, the street has been blocked off by the police for something else, so they're trapped in there. And I think it does become a situation of one-upmanship. We've got an African-Canadian, we've got an Asian man, we've got a Jewish woman and a First Nations woman and a white woman who actually owns the house that's selling it. So, you know, it's little snippets of Canadian history that are brought there, and the sort of guilt, the anger, the understanding, and the history that all these people have about where the people came from and what they had to endure in Canada suddenly comes out in this particular situation.
Drew, I'm sure you go ahead, Diane.
Oh, I was just going to add to that. I think, too, that this play coming out at this time is really interesting because if this had come out even 5 years ago, the language that we have around these kinds of topics wouldn't have allowed for the kind of discussion that we have now on stage. I think the last few years in society, we've actually started using words like intersectional or just having deeper conversations around intersections between different groups of people. And it's manifested in this play, which is quite humorous, and there's a real connection to the zeitgeist and the language that we have and the access that we have now in terms of understanding that we wouldn't have had before.
It's always fun to see something that's so immediate and really speaks to what we're living through. For the both of you, the last thing I want to ask is, did you find yourself rooting for one of these characters? Drew, you just walked us through some of them. We have a Jewish woman. We have a Black character. We have an Indigenous person trying to buy the house. I'm just curious to know if your biases came through or if you found one character more sympathetic than the other. Diane?
Well, And you're leaving out the Asian.
And the Asian man, yes, thank you.
Right. Well, no, I mean, obviously, I'm First Nations, and I had to bend over backwards not to give the Haudenosaunee woman all the great lines.
Yeah.
look at each of the characters and try and attack this issue from their perspective. Hopefully, I've done this. This is going to be up to what the audience and the actors have decided. So, no, I didn't have a favorite, other than the fact that, as I said, I'm Indigenous myself. I wanted them all to have a full history, a full character, and their opinion being as intricate and as detailed as anybody else's. When you say all likable or whatever, one of the characters is not very likable, but I think hopefully I've made him unlikable in a realistic manner.
Right. Well, I think if audiences saw your work Alternatives at the Centaur, you did give space not just to the characters with Indigenous background, but the other characters have room to grow and express themselves. Even, we can decide whether we're sympathetic to them or not. But yeah, you have to have these fully fleshed out characters, even if someone's bringing something different to the table. Diane, did you find yourself relating more to one character over the other?
No, I think because I am myself not a homeowner, and I look at all of these characters as, we have an academic, we have somebody who owns three businesses, we have someone who is freshly divorced and is buying a house for fun, that sort of thing. I've put myself in a position where I'm not judging any of them.
Right.
It really is just trying to bring out the fullness of and the duality of each of the characters. So we see their humanity, even if they're at this time playing someone who's kind of unlikable. But the tactic is really they all want the house. So that's how we're dealing with it, is all those traits that are kind of unlikable are really about navigating how to get the attention of the home seller.
You both are coming across as very equitable, benevolent, very diplomatic in your answers. So I applaud you for that. Drew, you were in town last fall. Will you make it out this month to see the show? It's a world premiere.
I've got my train ticket ready. I'm looking forward to seeing this because we deal with so many social and political issues in this play by four, five, if you include the white woman, their perspectives. I'm a little worried about this. As I was telling Diane, I'm expecting to be like canceled when this play comes out.
It's going to take a lot to cancel you, Drew Hayden Taylor. You've won too many prizes. Your name is on too many things, I think. this has been really great to chat with both of you. I'm really energized about seeing the show right now, hearing your description of the characters and the stuff that's going to be up for debate here. So thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Oh, it's a delight.
Oh, and Diane, we'll see you this weekend. Will you be at, do you have time to balance your two shows for Every Day She Rose last weekend?
I will be there. I'll be there at the end of the closing. So
fabulous.
I won't have a chance to see it again, but yeah.
Okay, to the both of you, don't forget to hydrate and get lots of sleep because you were very busy, both of you, and I appreciate you taking the time to join Upstage.
Thank you so much again.
My reserve, grazie.
I love when he uses that line. That was the voice of Drew Hayden Taylor, playwright and director Diane Marie Bridge. Open house April 18th to the 28th. Opening will be on Friday the 19th at 8 o'clock, and it's at Factory Studios. I had to Google this. That's okay. You can Google it too. So it is at 2000 Notre Dame East. And if I say the Jacques Cartier Bridge and the Molson Brewery, that's going to give you an idea of where it is exactly. So it's kind of where Molson legendarily has been brewing beer for a very, very long time. So Papineau Metro, and then walking there. And I think there is parking nearby, but don't take my word for it. Tickets at zeffy.com, Zeffy. You can also head to Infinitheater's website, infinitheater.com, infinitheater.com, and also email boxoffice@infinitheater.com. There is a hyphen between box and office, 514-987-1774. Tickets are $30. Reduced prices are available. And we were mentioning Diane's other show, Every Day She Rose, four more performances happening in the neighborhood, actually, at the Espace Libre Studio. There is a pre-show talk before tomorrow night's show at 6 o'clock with Laurent Maurice Lafontaine, Quentin and Carlin Holmes and Chris Negabanziza. And I hope to see it myself this weekend. Diane is also the co-host of a new show called La Parole. It's a podcast from Black Theater Workshop. And it happens to be a CKUT co-production, I believe, which is really neat. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts and listen also on the Black Theater Workshop page. What a busy woman. It's wild. All right. So you're listening to Upstage on CKUT. Running a little bit late here. When we come back, we're going to find out about Le Patin Libre's new production. And later on, Xander Chung is going to find out about a new dance duet for you to check out. Stay tuned.
Thanks to everyone who donated to CKUT's annual funding drive. Your generosity truly helps keep our engines burning. It's never too late to donate. You can do so by calling 514-907-9424 or going to ckut.ca and hit the green Make a Pledge button at the top. All paid entries will be entered into a grand prize draw. You can pay your pledge and pick up your gift weekdays between 11 to 6 p.m. or by appointments. Call 514-907-9424. Thank you.
Not what I got.
Down another dreamless night. You're right by my side. You wake me up. You say it's time to ride. In the dead of night, strange canyon road, strange look in your eyes. You shut them as we fly. As we fly, Stark Hollow Town, Carson City lights. Baby, let's get high, spend Johnny's cash, hitch another ride. We laugh until we cry. You say go fast, I say hold on.
Welcome back to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Sarah DeA. I'm joined in studio by Xander Chung, who's getting ready to interview an artist who'll be dancing at the May or the Mai next week. But I'm going to talk to someone who's going to be skating next week, or rather watching people skate. Alexandra Hamel is the co-founder of Le Patin Libre. You might have seen some of their artistic works before. They are taking artistic skating to a whole new level, elevating it to high performance art, I would say, by combining athleticism as well as an artistic sensibility. The company's been busy over the last couple of years, and they've actually been touring, which allowed them to pick up new talent all around the world for their new show, Murmuration. I mentioned it off the top of the hour. If you ever see a flock of birds, they're all moving in sync. There's no apparent leader, unless we're thinking of Canada geese. And it's so fascinating to think, like, how are they all moving in the same place? How do they know where to go? Le Patin Libre is looking at that movement of groups in motion for this particular show. It is going to be at the Mount Royal Arena in the Plateau, somewhere near the intersection of Mount Royal and Saint Denis, if you're not familiar with the area. And it'll be running from the 16th to the 21st. Joining me on the line right now is Alexandra Hamel, who is the co-founder of Le Patin Libre. Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you for being here, and congratulations on your new show.
Thanks.
It's noted that it is a sequin-free show, far removed from the conventions of artistic skating. If you can indulge me for a moment to talk about the ethos of Le Patin Libre, it is meant to be quite different from the figure skating you would see. We saw just a couple of weeks ago, there was the figure skating championship was at the Bell Centre here in Montreal. This is something totally different.
Yeah, well, we're from that world. We were all trained in traditional figure skating. We did 15, 20 years of it, the competitions and the professional shows and all that. And basically, we're a bunch of, I would say, like, people with a more artistic mind who love freedom, who like alternative culture. And we wanted to get out of there, like, escape the sequins and escape, like, you know, the judges and the pointing systems and the silly costumes. And we wanted to do something actual, something that we would be proud of, that we could bring on the artistic scene, that would be cool. So we started the troupe Le Patin Libre for that almost 20 years ago. And now it grew into a quite solid choreographic company, and we're touring a lot.
Yeah, you have a receptive audience around the world. What are your favorite audiences for you personally to play to?
Well, the audience of contemporary dance was very receptive and generous to us. But on the other end, we still do like winter carnivals and things like that. People in Montreal saw us like at Esplanade Tranquille doing those short performances this winter. So we have like one foot in the very artsy contemporary world and another foot in something more festive, more street. And it creates a special personality for our group. And we like when those two audiences meet and are gathered by our shows.
Yeah, and it also lets you play to a wider audience as well, because you can bring in families at a carnival or at the Espace Tranquille, at the Place, in the Quartier des Spectacles, but you can also play to more artistic audiences. You have a backing of contemporary dance in Canada, because you've got support from Danse Danse and the Can Dance Network, the National Arts Centre. Like, your work's been recognized as something with artistic merit.
Yeah, since 2013, we've been supported by these organizations. We previously toured other shows like at NAC and Luminato in Toronto and, you know, all those. And so now it's the third show we're bringing on this scene. But we're not only bringing it to the contemporary dance audience. The show is cool enough and athletic enough, and it's fast-paced. It's not about speed and about togetherness. So it's not that very, like, heady, artsy dance. It's something, I think, more extreme and more intense and more festive that everybody likes. So we also have, like, you know, kids and families that never would go to contemporary dance, that they come and see our thing, they enjoy it. And then we tell them, like, you know what? That was choreography. That was dance. Maybe you could like some of it that would not be on ice skates.
The image of the dancers, they're wearing these mustard yellow tops and gray pants and then red, not leotards, but socks on top of the skates. And so there's an image of that at Upstage CKUT on our Instagram page if you want to check that out. And also lepatinlibre.com. So tell me about the visual aspect of the show. I know there's a bit of costume changes at some point, but what's the overall impression you want people to have?
Well, the costume, like, I've always been simple in Le Patin Libre. This one is inspired a little bit by the look of those starlings that look like little brown birds, but in fact, they're really cool when you look at them from close. And they do those amazing shapes in the sky, so we've been inspired by those. And there's also a little inspiration from the punk aesthetic that influenced me a lot in my youth and still now. So it's a mix of those two things. But more important than the costume is the choreography. It's a very intensely collaborative choreography. We kind of borrowed from the starlings their system, enabling them to do those crazy whimsical shapes in the sky. Mm-hmm. And we discovered that as skaters, because we flow through space just like birds, we could replicate those shapes. We can be the first human version of it. The mix of all that makes this a special experience for us to be in that narration, but also for people seeing it, being like, wow, those humans can also do this thing. And we're really proud of that show.
So one of the first things I see when I look at the photos is the arm movement. Now, if you see a figure skater, you know that arms are a big part of making your jumps and making a lot of your moves. But there is a bird quality to the shape that you've given your dancers. Tell me more about, you know, conveying what a bird does and have a human skate that?
Well, the bird is not only an image that we are inspired by. It's something that we deeply are. I think that anybody has already flown through space really fast, either on a motorcycle or on skis or on a surfboard, will understand that adrenaline kick, that moment when you feel more than what you are usually. And I think the birds also have that feeling, and skating in that show at high speed, the arms create those shapes, not because I tell skaters to do it. It happens. We become something else, and there is this interaction with air, and there is this transformation of our being through speed that is at the base of our choreographic proposal. So, yeah, we look like birds. We are birds.
I'm speaking with Alexandra Hamel, who is the co-founder of Le Patin Libre and their show Murmuration, which is the word used to talk about a big flock of birds moving together. He was just mentioning the beauty of a starling. It's coming to Mount Royal Arena in the Plateau next week. Now, if you think about an arena, like taking your kids to free skate or hockey practice, it doesn't seem like a very inviting space necessarily. How do you have to adapt that municipal arena to make it look like a place where there's a dance show happening?
Well, we have a long-term relation with the borough, with Le Plateau. Like, they understand that it's good to bring hundreds of people at the rink and many of those who never go in ice rinks usually. So it's good to share that public space with others. And we make, like, we show up with a truck of gear and we really transform it into a theater. It's the same show that we toured at the Venice Biennale and all those fancy theaters. It's exactly the same we bring in that ice rink. So it is transformed into a really cool theater. And after many of the shows, the people can bring their skates and hop on stage and then dance with the artist.
How fun.
So it has this participative buzz too.
That's so fun. What kind of feedback did you get from going to places like the Biennale in Venice that like led you to adapt maybe your work on your work? Did you hear anything from these international audiences that made you rethink what you were doing?
Those international audiences are very curious and very generously accepting of what we do. So we have lots of support and encouragement from them. And sometimes we have like other audiences that come. So we have like groups of hockey players who normally use the rinks, or like the figure skating club, or just people who normally would go to Disney on Ice. But, you know, like $100 ticket is quite expensive for Disney on Ice. So they come to our show and they're mind blown. There's an habit to cheer a lot in hockey games and at Disney on Ice. So those people come in and cheer and give some kind of energy to the show. And we also like that. So you can have like that Biennale of Venice spectator who will be very calm, like at the opera. And next to him or her, you'll have like someone cheering, like when they go at Disney on Ice or an hockey game. And I love that. I love to make contemporary choreography not only sophisticated and mind-blowing, but also something fun, something exciting.
Your single-minded focus with your work at Le Patin Libre, I admire it so much. And it's so it causes you to feel so enthusiastic as well, just listening to you talk about this. You'll be touring the show after its run in Montreal. Are you excited to be taking this to more audiences?
Yeah, after we're going to Toronto with TO Live and Fall for Dance Nord Festival. And next year, we have a big North American tour. Like, we'll go, like, to a bunch of cities. So we feel really privileged. Like, it's difficult to tour choreographic shows now. And we've been well-supported and have good opportunities with it. So, it's a good one.
You're already sold out for Tuesday, January the 9th in Stockholm. So the people are very excited to see you.
Oh, well, good for Stockholm then. But we're not sold out in Montreal. There are many tickets left, in fact, so it's easy to find them on our website.
Yes, I'll give some more information in just a moment. It's a really nice thing to bring the kids to and bring anyone to. It's going to be a really good time. I'm so glad that I got to meet you, Alexandra. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Bye.
That is Alexandra Hamel, who is the co-founder of Le Patin Libre, and their show is coming to the Mount Royal Arena in the Plateau, or Arena Montréal. It is called Murmuration. It is going to be April 16th to the 21st, so that is Tuesday until the weekend. You can get your... Sorry about that. You can get your tickets at lepatinlibre.com. The website is bilingual, so you can get both options there. And the ticket prices are, I'm just checking, ranging at 45 for adults and 30 for kids. But this is really something quite exceptional that you really can't see in too many different places. And it's a Montreal-based company with 15 dancers on stage. This can be really, really special. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Sarah. I'm your host this evening. When we come back, Xander Chung is going to touch base with a dancer who's going to be performing at the Mai next week. The dance is going to advocate against meaningless statements. If you've ever heard something and you thought to yourself, that sounds like empty rhetoric, well, that is going to be interpreted into a dance piece. Really excited to hear more about this. We're going to hear some more from Orville Peck here, Dead of Night. Orville is part of the lineup at the Montreal Jazz Festival, one of the free shows. The lineup was unveiled earlier this week, so we'll enjoy some of this and be back in a moment. The mysterious Orville Peck bringing his very interesting twist on country music to the Jazz Festival this summer. Oh my goodness, it's still April, but we can already get excited about Jazz Fest. And also Fringe. Fringe Festival tickets went on sale last week, Xander. Are you excited to be in the festival, to be a spectator this year?
You know what? I'm just really looking forward to just taking that entire time off. I'm not producing any. I'm just going to relax, watch some amazing art.
You deserve that because you were so busy with your show last year.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. And it was an amazing show, too. I'm just so lucky to have done it.
I'm really curious about this dance production that you have for us here. L'Inconsistance, coming to the May next week.
Exactly. So a big question is, how often do you take comfort in dance, in movement, in expression, to find beauty at the tip of your toes, the wave of your arms, the inherent meaning of a gesture, a beck, and a call? Or even a protest. I remember accidentally wandering into a flash mob back in the early aughts. I was in high school, and despite the freedom to perform, I took it entirely for granted and hated every second of it. I am not a dancer. But now for public demonstrations. Permits are needed. The red tape tumor must be appeased, lest the police subject you to a less than kind kettling. But also, did you know that it is illegal to dance in Iran? On Wednesday, the 17th, 7:30, the Mai will be housing the world premiere of L'Inconsistance, a show by Vachik Dance, a company of two, in which half the duo joins me tonight. Welcome, Nazim.
Hi, thank you.
Yes, I'm really happy to have you here on the phone with us, and I'm really happy to talk about your show. It's a fascinating piece. It's the world premiere. Can you give us some insight as to what to expect from your production?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for this interview. So, can you repeat, please, your question at the end?
Oh, certainly. Yes.
Ending sentence. Sorry.
Not a problem. So, I was just wondering if you could just lend us some insight, you know, for our listeners as to kind of what to expect from the show that you're putting on.
Yes. So, as you said, we are working on a political subject on our dance. We try to bring this political question in our dance, which is not very common in dance propositions to ask the political question. And as we and my partner, we are Iranian, and we are coming a very politically country which has many questions, political questions. We bring this into our proposition, and what we expect is to communicate it and share it with our audience here in Montreal. And to bring this question, the main question of our show or problematic of our show is this question: where does our tendency to submit to empty discourse or empty rhetoric come from? We are sharing this question, and we want our audience to think about this question. And with our proposition, we try to in a movement way, dance way, and but with other mediums as music and light and even text in our proposition, share it with our public and see how they react to that, or how it makes them maybe think about this question.
Yeah. And honestly, there's a lot of really interesting political questions regarding the subject that you're going to be working under, right? Like, I find it particularly fascinating and very much apropos to everything that's currently happening on the international stage, right? We always, every time something horrible happens, we always have, you know, our prime minister, you know, looking somber, or the American president looking somber on his little parapet. And really nothing ever positively comes from it, right? And so I wonder, in regards to your specific show, could you maybe define, you know, what empty rhetoric kind of means to you specifically as an artist and as an activist?
Yes, very, very good question. I mean, by the empty rhetoric, I mean, what is it comes from my experience and our experience with my partner in our country. First of all, I mean, one of the country that happens how the people submit to empty rhetoric. And what is that? Our experience was in 1979. In our country, there were revolutions. And the political regime changed completely to a very religious new regime from 1979. And at that time, there were many discourse and rhetoric which was religious or Marxist at that time. And many intellectuals and also many religious people proposed it to people. And people just submit to that at that time. And then one day they could change the regime which were there in power at that time, change that. They came with all this ideology all mixed up, and then the religious radical religious took the power. And now after 45 years in this country, everything just goes to the disaster. You know, last year there were a very big movement in Iran, which internationally was known. The people, the young Iranian people, was shouting what happened in this country after 45 years that people just submitted to the rhetoric at that time. But to answer your question, the empty rhetoric, it could be in each context different. It is when you promise something to people that with this ideology or that ideology you will achieve, you will go to have these ideals, utopia, and then the people come and then they see that there is nothing about that. It's just a way for taking the power, and there's some people which are saying that we believe in this ideology. Then after they have the power and they are not even doing their ideology promises. But if the ideology in itself is something or empty or not, is something. But when you promise with ideology something to people for their life, and then when you took the power, there is nothing even from that. That is the empty thing. We mean the empty promises which are given by the politicals, but which are also highlighted by many intellectuals, the people, and the intellectual place in the society is very important because people...
as a way to maintain its institution, so to speak, right?
It could be institutions, it could be the people, it could be the people who have, it could be the artists also, which the people who has an audience. That people take them and they have confidence on them, and so I mean by that we can say that the role of these type of people which are if they are writers or artists or politicians or media is very important, more important than the people who took the power, because they are the intermediate between power, political power, and people. The people can have confidence on them and go for a rhetoric or not. And a rhetoric can have a very good appearance when it is given by some people, political or intellectuals. But then it could be really empty. That's what happened in 79 in Iran. And we are just living from 45 years ago, all the results of that. In some countries, I don't know if I'm explaining very much, developing the
question. You're coming in quite clear. Don't worry.
Yes. Okay. So, I mean, it is, and there is some countries which are less stable than others, and if you give a discourse and take the people with you, and then there is a radical change as it happened in Iran in 79, after the results could really bring a disaster. In some countries it's not exactly like this. I mean, it could take more time that something changed in a good way or in a bad way, because everything is more stable. And maybe the country have maybe more power, more money, and the or the base the basics of democracy in the way that different parties could debate maybe is more stable than others. And then especially in these type of countries, we think it's not just me, it's with my partner that we do that. We think that the role of the people who and the institutions and the media and the people, the non-people who can diffuse this a rhetoric or other is very important. In which country and in which context you're proposing this or that rhetoric. But in any country, it could happen soon or late. I mean, if the people, the inconsistency is about that.
It's essentially the rhetoric to engender a kind of complacency in a populace, to allow goalposts, mm-hmm. political goalposts to be moved, to allow people to just... You know, something that I've often observed is effectively how, not to get too bogged down in our own politics here, but, you know, whenever there are certain political parties that do have various values within maintaining the status quo. However, when opposing political parties often get into power, they will move that status quo further on. Thus, when the more centrist party gets into power, that status quo has effectively just shifted. We are now in a new normal. And effectively, you know, that is something that we should indeed push against on a regular basis. And it's very clear that you have a very strong personal connection. Of course, you know, the show is... It reaches into that period of time, into Iran, its politics, as well as, you know, the recent protests, which were awe-inspiring, you know, being a person of Chinese descent, you know, I can definitely relate in watching, you know, the protesters in Hong Kong and their treatment as well, right? It is something that... Especially with artists, I feel we have somewhat of a responsibility to, you know, push back and to at least get that, to find those answers or at least help an audience find more answers. I just want to say that it is absolutely brilliant having you on the show. And I would like to give you some time because we are running up on time here. I'd like to give you an opportunity to maybe signal boost a cause or a charity or something in which our listeners could potentially participate in rather than simply, you know, falling back on what could be considered empty rhetoric or empty action, such as just liking or sharing something on Facebook.
I'm not sure that I understand your question.
Are there any charities or any kind of movements, petitions, anything our listeners can do regarding, you know, the causes, the protests and the treatment of women in Iran?
Yes. Okay. Thank you for the question. I want just to clarify about the cause in Iran the woman cause is one of the cause, but it's not just that.
It's much more
of that. It's about a power government, which is as a very dictatorship country government, which are there, and they're very, very, it's about many things. It's just all the people are there and they fight for that. It's not just about women rights, much more than. But
it is essentially opposing the dictatorship.
Exactly.
I'm very sorry, Nazim. We are actually running up on time. Thank you again, truly. I really look forward to coming to see this show. If you'd like to share the audience, if you would like to share the audience with us, you'll be able to find the show at the My Theater between April 17th and the 20th, 7:30 p.m. For more information, visit m-a-i.qc.ca or just call 514-982-3386.
Thank you so much, Sandra. That is time for Upstage for this evening. We'll be back next Thursday. Thank you to all of our guests, including Nassim, Alexandra Amel, Diane Marie Bridge, Andrew Hayden Taylor. I'll talk to you next week. Up next is Gray Matters here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Our memories as a community are the heart of our legacy, helping us create a journey down the lanes of time. Do you have photos, videos, or audio recordings of West Cairns performances, rehearsals, or events? We want them all. We are building a special archive to showcase the beautiful moments we've shared together. Dust off those old photo albums, dig into your video archives, and share your West Cairns memories with us. Simply contact 514-641-9149. Let us relive the joy, laughter, and the cultural richness that has defined West Cairns for almost 50 years.
Help us spread the word. CKUT is looking for someone to join our team as the chair of the board of directors. Our board of directors reads the fine print, approves the annual budget, engages in community outreach, and keeps CKUT's eye on the bigger picture. The board meets for 2 hours every month, and the chair circulates agendas, keeps meetings organized, and acts as a liaison between the outside world and the board. If you're passionate about the station, this is an opportunity to help lead CKUT into a new era of community media. For more information, please send a message to admin@ckut.ca.
Good evening and welcome to the April 11th edition of Gray Matters. Tonight